Okay. So, in the 64 items, the first one is waking the Lord, Jagran Seva. Waking the Lord by chanting of Vedas, Stutis, and other verses accompanied by musical instruments, thus offering oneself submissively to the Lord before entering the deity room for puja. This is known as Veda Goshana Vinari Vadyer Vandi Staver Prabodhanam. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes here, traditionally in large temples, devotees chant Vedic verses to awaken the Lord in the temple. In the Venkateshwara temple in South India, devotees chant the Venkateshwara Subrabhata, a hymn specifically meant for waking the Lord. The worshipper should at least ring a bell to draw the Lord's attention and indicate that he would like to offer service. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada stresses the importance of having a bell also in the temple room for the visitors to ring as they enter the Lord's house, enabling them to offer the first item of worship as well. Prabhupada says here, there must be a big bell hanging in front of the temple, of the temple room, so that whomever comes in the room can ring the bell. This item is called Prabodhana, or offering oneself submissively to the Lord. This is the first item in deity worship. So the idea is that one is offering oneself to the Lord, and that in here then there is some music. So the here it says mantras are there, stutis, other verses, and you can accompany it by musical instruments. So that's in its elaborate form. In its simple form, then we find that the bell, because the bell contains all music. All music is contained in the bell. And so by ringing the bell, then that contains all the music. And then the essence of this whole point is the prabodhanam, or to offer oneself submissively. In other words, one has come to give oneself for the Lord's service, offer oneself to the Lord. So this is the first item. In other words, the first thing that one does is offer oneself to the Lord. That is the first. Then all the other items then build on top of that. Okay. All right? Is that understood? Okay. Then number two, chanting Jaya on seeing the deity. It's called Jaya Shabda. Srila Prabhupada writes, the visitor must chant Jaya Shri Radha Govinda or Jaya Shri Shri Radha Madhava when he rings the bell. In either case, the word Jaya must be uttered. One should immediately offer obeisances to the Lord, falling down like a stick. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 4, 334 purport. So the word Jaya should be saying. Jaya means all glories. All glories to whoever the presiding deity is. So here we come in, Jai Jai, you know, Jai Shri Radha Madhava. Like that. Or you go to the Samadhi, Jai Shri the Prabhupada. So one must, after, with the mood of offering oneself, then one chants Jaya. So that is the essential point, is that the glories must be offered to the Lord. When Lord Brahma first saw the Lord, or when he came to see the Lord, then upon seeing him, he raised his hand like this, in this mudra. And that's called the Pataka Mudra. So then he chanted Jai, and he put his hands up like that. So that is...
Pataka?
Yeah. Pataka is a flag. So that's the flag mudra, like that.
Right. You have to do that with like your spiritual master, same kind of principle.
Bring a bell, ring it, and then go Jai, and then put the hand. Basic is just coming to offer oneself and offering obeisances, like that. Basic same principle is there, but
you say it to yourself, or do you have to shout out Jai?
No, it can be said more quietly, like that. Depends upon the situation. Like that, but in the temple it's better, it's more, can be heard. Doesn't need to be the whole temple here, but one says.
And then the entrance came, there's a massive room, and it's knocked on the door, it's a guy's room,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll work. Whole thing is get attention. So in here, best way is a bell because it's music. You know, like that. But, you know, in a room where there's no bell, then you just knock on the door. Okay, number three, offering obeisances, namaskar. In the early morning, you should offer obeisances specifically to the deities only after awakening them. Because it is enjoined in the shastra that one should not disturb the Lord by offering obeisances when he is resting or bathing. Nor, strictly speaking, should one circumambulate the Lord at these times. Also, offer obeisances just outside the deity room, never inside, since it is enjoined to offer obeisances from a respectful distance. Within the deity room, offer pranams with joined hands, pranam mudra, by mantra and with the mind. So generally, the Pancharatrik temples, they would have a room next to the deity room that you go through, that you do your achman, you do all your puvanga karmas, you can offer obeisance to the deity, everything, then go in. So most temples don't have such an arrangement. They have some facility to offer obeisances outside. So that is the best, is that they're offered outside and then one goes in into the deity room. And then in the deity room, then one would use the pranam mudra, like that. So one generally would not be offering obeisances inside the deity room. So then on this, then the details, astanga pranam and panchanga pranam. We discussed this something before. Srila Prabhupada writes, the word danda means pole or rod. A rod or pole falls straight. Similarly, when a devotee offers obeisances, similarly, when a devotee offers obeisances to a superior with all eight angas, parts of the body, he performs what is called dandavat. Sometimes we only speak of dandavats, but actually do not fall down. In any case, dandavat means falling down like a rod before one's superior. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 167, purport. Then he continues, Krishna Kshetra, the Hari Bhakti Vilas tells us how to offer dandavat, pranam. Offer obeisances with eight angas, your feet, knees, chest, hands, head, sight, mind, and words. Yeah, so all these should be touching the ground, right? The feet, the knees, right? The chest, the hands, the head. Then sight means you see the deity before you offer obeisances. Mind means in the mind you'll be thinking of the deity while you're offering obeisances. And words, you'll be saying some prayer, right? So this, then you get all of them. With your 2 feet, knees, chest, and hands, and head touching the ground, with your eyes downcast and half open, recite a suitable prayer while meditating that your head is under the Lord's lotus feet. So in this way, one gets to, touch the Lord's feet. To offer panchang pranam, offer obeisances with 5 angas, the knees, the arms, the head, the intellect, and words. The chest does not touch the ground. So it is an offense to offer obeisances with only 1 hand. That means with 1 hand extended in front of the head, while the other holds a bead bag or other sacred item off the floor. So therefore, you should make arrangements. You can offer obeisances with both hands on the floor, not with one. See, offering a respect with 1 hand is considered for shudras, you know, like that. So you find all the Western pranams are all basically shudra pranams, you know, just haribol or something like this, or, you know. But they're all with 1 hand, shaking hands with 1 hand. Everything's just 1-handed. So this is the respects offered by shudras, like that. Generally, the gentlemen and all that, then they'll use both hands together. So that one should see that when offering obeisances, also both hands are used. One should avoid not using both hands. Okay, and it mentions that the men may perform either type of pranam, but women traditionally perform only panchang pranam, since their chest should not touch the earth. The Hari Bhakti Vilas, emphasizing the importance of pranam, states that whenever offering pranam, one should prostrate at least 4 times. Like that. The tradition would be is one would offer 4 obeisances. Like that. 1, stand up, again. But we see some of them, they'll go down and then come up to their knees and then go down again and come up. And you know, they'll do different things too. Or just do that, come up like this. And you see it. In South, you see it still practiced. Though in North, you basically don't see it anymore. Just if you get someone to offer their obeisances once, you're doing pretty good. So in our tradition, basically, we just do the 1. Okay. And it mentions that if you're going in the deity room, that then one should try to go in a humble mood. And it is mentioned that when going, then one may touch unless you're carrying all kinds of stuff, but you touch the side of the door. And then when you step in, you go with the right foot first, slightly bent, like that. And some sound must be made, as we mentioned, knocking, clapping, ringing a bell. Yeah. What's his name? Gopavindapal was checking something with the Madhvas and why they cross their feet. And the reason that they do it is that they are under the opinion that because it's supposed to be dandavat, like a stick. Stick is just one piece of wood, a straight piece of wood. So then when you offer obeisances and both feet are just kept next to each other, then they say there's like a split, so it's not like one piece. So they overlap their feet. Like that. That is the reason. Though some of them put it all the way on the back of the one foot, some put one toe on the heel. The basic thing is just put, you know, one set of toes on the other. You know, just like that. The heels can be next to each other, but just you kind of like cross the feet a little bit. Then it's like considered that it becomes one. So that would mean in the same way, when you offer basins to the hands, you wouldn't have them separate, because otherwise it would be the same principle. So they must be either together, either with the, you know, one hand on top of the other, or next to each other, where the palms face each other and cross the thumbs. Like that. So that makes it as one item. And the crossing of the thumbs, or putting one hand directly on top of the other, signifies touching the right hand to the right foot, the left hand to the left foot. Right. Okay. Yes.
You mentioned in this panchang pranam and nasanga pranam, you use, in one case this one, in other case this one.
You can use either one. You can use either the palms facing each other, cross the thumbs, or put down the right hand, the left hand on top. Like that. It doesn't really matter. Just whichever you feel the most comfortable at. You can do either way. Like that. The Madhvas would generally put the right hand on the left. The Shris would put the palms together and cross the thumbs. So it doesn't really matter. They're both bona fide.
You mentioned that there are basins inside the deity room. But sometimes I seem to the others, they like put their head on the deity seat.
That's another thing, but the dandavat's in there. But that's only those who are... Yeah, because the injunction is that one should put one's head on the deity's feet. So the pujaris get that opportunity. And then in the... What do you call it? Then there was one devotee who was praying to the Lord that everybody should have that opportunity. So then this concept of the shatari this, it looks like a helmet with shoes on it, on the top. And so that, those are, the Lord keeps his feet on those shoes, and then that is then put on the devotee's head. This way all devotees can touch the head to the Lord's feet. Same time as we see here in the pranams, in the mind, and one is, one's mind, one is thinking of the Lord and keeping one's head on the Lord's feet. So in these three ways, one can follow this injunction. And circumambulating. Yeah. In circumambulation.
When you go around and then you go in front of the
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. It's called circumambulation. Yeah, because yeah. Yeah, that'll come up a lot later. We'll get into that. But in any case, the idea of that turning when one's going around the deity, so one's not just walking by, but as one comes in front of the deity, because you're walking, then you naturally have to turn to the right. You're keeping the deity on the right side as you're going around, right? So when you get in front of the deity, you'll have your right side to the deity. So the idea is you don't just walk past without some recognition. So then one turns, faces the deity, and then one just keeps turning and then keeps going. You know, it's natural. If you're walking, then if you keep facing the deity, then you're going to turn, you're just going to turn around. You understand? Like that. In any case, also it's proper that you turn clockwise instead of counterclockwise. So that would mean you would be coming and the deity would be on your right, so you have to turn 90 degrees to face the deity. And then you want to keep going forward rather than just turning back. You would turn around, continue in that direction, and then, you understand? You continue in a clockwise direction and go. Yes?
Well, you said about the helmet with the Lord's feet. Does that mean if you had, you know, if you touched your head, you wouldn't have to do pranams?
No, no. Pranams is another thing. It means there's another item Rupa Goswami mentions about touching one's head to the Lord's feet. So that item is done. But dandavats is another thing. You know, it's included in dandavats, it's included in the worship. But it's, there are different things. Like that, that's the one of the major aspects in deity worship, is to be able to understand the subtleties. Because there's a lot of things that look practically exactly the same or look exactly the same, but they have different meanings. You know? Because they have different purposes. You understand? Like, you go into the temple, you offer your obeisances to the spiritual master. That's for, you know, just you're seeing him offering your obeisances, everything like this. Then you have the aspect before you start the puja, then you're offering obeisances to the spiritual master. But this is now to take permission to even, like, begin the whole process of deity worship. And when you get into the deity room, then you're offering respects to the spiritual master again. Right? Now this is like you have all the things and you're going to start the technical worship. Then you're going to worship the spiritual master again with 16 items. But that is now as part of the preliminary, you want to worship the Lord, but you can only approach the Lord through the spiritual master, right? This is not for his blessings to do it, or. In other words, you're offering to come into the temple. You're offering to, you know, enter the deity room. You're offering obeisances then to, be able to come to the proper consciousness and to assist him in the worship. Then you're worshiping him as the approach to the Lord. Then you're worshiping the Lord. Then after, then you'll offer the remnants to the Lord's associates and to the spiritual master. You understand? So like that, just like that, in five times or so, you'll offer obeisances to the spiritual master. But they all have different meanings and purposes. So the whole idea of the Pancharatra is to refine the consciousness, to the point where one can understand these things, and this becomes part of your culture. You know, rather than, oh, I already offered my obeisances, but, well, yes, but what did you offer for? You just offer because you're supposed to offer. But what was your intention? What was your mood? Why did you do that? You understand? So the whole Pancharatra, the idea is that it engages the mind, engages the senses, and one should understand what are all these for, why there's a differences in all these different things. Does that make some sense? So that should be kept in mind, because so much of what goes on here, you'll see, is very similar. You know? And I've seen, and going around and talking to many pujaris and seeing what they do, very few understand these subtleties. So they have a tendency to pack them together. Because they figure, oh, it's the same thing. It is the same thing, but it has a totally different purpose. You know? You understand? Okay. Anything else on this? Okay. Then 4 is offering Mangal Aroti. Then... Okay. Yeah, so he makes a note here that generally they're Krishna Kshetra, that the variations in zones, geography, and seasons. Temple should begin Mangal Arati no earlier than 4, generally no later than 4, no, 5 a.m. Though Prabhupada mentioned in Mayapur, because it gets light very early here, they start Mangal Arati at 4, but Prabhupada said no earlier than 4:15. His point was, is Radha and Krishna have been up all night dancing, so you got to give them a little more time to rest. You know, so maybe it's a getting light early, but still 4:15. So we see most temples 4:30 is the standard time. You know, practically everywhere. Like that. He says 5. You know, no later than 5, of course, unless as long as the neighbors don't. They say complain like that. And when I was in Israel, then they have interesting programs. Everyone gets up at the regular time in the morning, chants all their japa, and then at 7 o'clock, then they have Mangal Arati and, you know, Guru Puja and class and everything all in one shot, because the neighbors will flip out. Okay, Srila Prabhupada writes, there must be regular Mangal Arati in the temple during the early morning, an hour and a half before the sun rises. That's from Madhyalila 24, 334 purport. Srila Prabhupada further emphasized in his Nectar of Devotion the benefit of seeing the Arati perform. He writes, in the Skanda Purana there is the following description of the results of seeing Arati, worship of the deity. Quote, if someone sees the face of the Lord while Arati is going on, he can be relieved of all sinful reactions coming from many, many thousands and millions of years past. He is even excused from the killing of a brahmana or similar prohibited activities. Nectar Devotion, Chapter 9. Arati, and then Krishna Kshetra continues, Arati is also called Niranjana or Drishti, which means waving auspicious items before a person in order to dispel inauspicious influences or elements as a means of protection. The various items offered, all representative of the material elements in pure form, and the corresponding sense objects, sound, form, touch, etc., are auspicious and purifying. Thus all Artik ceremonies offered to the Lord are auspicious, Mangala. But the first Artik of the day in the early morning is considered particularly auspicious for all who participate. The Mangal Artik, the first Artik of the day, should be a full artik, with incense, lamp, water, cloth, flowers, and chamara. In warm weather, you may also offer the fan at this time. One should make an offering of milk sweets before Mangal Artik. You will also find... Okay. So this is important. important. The one that this artik must be performed. So the person who performs the artik, person who sees the artik, both are benefited. Both get the same benefit. So here, just by seeing, then one can be relieved of sinful reactions coming from many, many thousands and millions of years past. Even excused from the killing of a Brahman or similar prohibited activities. So out of all the sinful activities, and there's five really big ones, and then one of them is killing a Brahman. So then this is even relieved from, even excused by just going to Mangal Artik. Okay. Okay, then he gets into preliminary activities of purification, Purvanga Karma. So before performing the main worship of the main deity, see, up to this point, basically, this is all considered within Abhigamana, like that. For the Pujari, that's another thing, where they actually go in and wake up the Lord. But this aspect of Prabodhanam, everybody can do, whether one's a Pujari, or whether one is not a Pujari, the idea of offering oneself to the Lord, everyone is doing. Right? So offering oneself to the Lord, chanting Jai upon seeing the Lord, offering obeisances, and attending the Mangal Artik, this is all part of Abhigamana. Alright? You know? This is also included there. At the same time as it's part of the main items of worship. So then, after Mangal Artik, before you start the main worship, then there's all kinds of preliminary activities. And these preliminary activities, they're called Purvanga Karma. Is everyone going to last, or is everyone going to fall asleep? You last? You? Yeah. I hope I last. Purvanga Karma. Purvanga means purva, before. So all the angas all the different branches of preliminary activities that must be performed. This is also called yoga, right? So before performing the main worship of the main deity, with the 16 basic upacharas, one should perform certain preliminary activities of purification and preliminary worship. After describing these, we shall continue with number 5 of the 64 upacharas, which corresponds to number 1 of the 16 basic upacharas. Okay, consecrating water for purification. Samanya Argya and Vishesha Argya. So, then Krishna Kshetrabhu writes here, water is an important element in worship. Not only does it physically purify many items, but when consecrated by deity mantra, which is non-different from the deity, it gains spiritual potency. The water thus consecrated will be used for prokshana, sprinkling for purification, on the place, the articles, and on oneself. This process is common to all types of puja, and the various puja manuals give similar methods for making the samanya argya, or pure water prepared in a simple way for general use. One will usually establish samanya argya at the start of the worship for use at that time. We'll get into all details later. In other words, we're going through all explanations. The technical things we'll get into later. So in other words, you have these argyas that you're setting up. Samanya argya, and then later on, Vishesha argya. That will come a little bit later. Vishesha means special. So samanya means general or simple. That after doing achman, then one purifies that water. And that, you know, in a simple way. And then that water is used for purifying oneself, the place, the paraphernalia, everything. Then once you've done all the preliminary worship, and the preliminary setup and all that, when you get around to the time where you're going to start the worship for the deity, then you make the Vishesha Argya. And this is special because now, instead of just putting some mantras in it, either some mula mantra or bead syllables, like that, now you actually install the deity in the water. If you're worshipping Nisringa, you install Nisringa in the water. If you're worshipping Radha Krishna, you install Radha and Krishna in the water. Like that. Is that understood? The deity themselves is installed in that water. Also the bathing water. You can do that for the water for bathing. So those then become very special. And then this is generally done in a conch shell. So sometimes the Visesha Argya is called Shank Stapana. You know, or Argya Stapana. Like that. And then this Argya is used in for two things. It's used for offering as Argya, meaning the 16th is one of the 16 items. And then you have a special Achman cup, and where you also pour some of that. You'll establish that, pour some of that into the Achman cup. Not the one we use, a separate one. Right? And then that water is used for any item that you don't have present. You know, like you want to offer Angavastra, you don't have a gamsha, then you just offer it from that Visesha Argya, right? But what's in the conch shell, then that'll be used above the Lord's head for the in the 16 items. But it's made in the conch, and then a little bit is poured into the water that you have in that Achman cup. Okay. Then you have establishing a seat. Ashan Stapana means one's own, in this meaning one's own seat, is that one must recognize that we're only getting a place to sit because the Lord's energy, or Bhumi Devi, she allows that. She gives us a place, so we respect her that she is giving us this place. It's considered one should not sit on the bare floor. Asans can be made out of wood, stone. It's interesting that here it makes earth. That must be fired earth. Bamboo and grasses, other than kusa, notice that asans made of wood, stone, earth, bamboo, and grass. Oh, I see. Okay. Shastra notes that asans made of wood, stone, earth, bamboo, and grasses, other than kusa, may cause sickness, poverty, and sorrow. Therefore, it's recommended that they be made out of kusa grass, silk, or wool, are the best for Vaishnav archan. Like that. Some other padatis may have these, but for the devotees, then it mentions kus, silk, or wool. And generally, you can also combine them. Put down a wool asan, and then on top of that, put the kusa grass. Or you may have a wooden asan, but on top of that, you put kusa grass. Or on top of that, you put wool. Or on top of it, you put wool and kusa grass. But you shouldn't use these others on their own. But the kusa, silk, or wool can be used on their own. Or in a combination. Like that. Okay. Then, arranging the articles. Patrastapana. Then you'll put the different articles in front of you. With the whole idea that two things. One is that they're in a place where it's easy to get at them for doing the particular worship that you need to do with them. You know, something that's more central or more used should be more in the front, something less can be more at the side. The other aspect is they should be put in such a way that after offering them, or, you know, what is their function, you will not have any problem with mixing prasad and bhoga. Like you offer a lamp, it can't go down then next to other things. So you must have a place to put it. So that's where all the prasad goes. So one has to see that prasad and bhog doesn't mix. And that it's, the things are easy to get at. The idea is you sit down, you don't get up. So once you've done patrastapana and asanastapana, it's understood you're not going to stand up for the rest of the puja. So before that, everything you need is there. Then patrastapana is done. Means you may be bringing in a few things, putting a few things down, bring a few more things, put a few more things down. But when everything's in place, you've done asanastapana, you sit, you make adjustments that everything's where you want it. So asanastapana, patrastapana are done. Then you're not supposed to get up. So one should arrange everything so one can do that all in one place. Right? Of course, if you're dressing big deities or this or that, you may be moving around. But we're talking about those who sit down and worship the small deities or the Shaligram. Like that. That means they sit and then you do everything there. And when you're finished, then you get up. Alright. Then, requesting the spiritual master and previous acharya's blessings, that's called Guru Pankti Namaskar. Then, we must invoke the blessings before beginning the worship. We must invoke the blessings of the spiritual master and the previous acharyas. That we should always remember that we're just assisting the spiritual master. We are not doing the worship. Spiritual master is doing the worship, we're assisting him. So under his direction, we're offering this, doing that, doing all these different things. It should always be understood that it is the spiritual master who's doing. Therefore, the point being made is asana means the spiritual master's seat. We may have our place where we sit, the Lord may have his, but there must be a place for the spiritual master. And then, because he performs the worship. Right? So you should... So this means before beginning the worship, then we will offer with pranam mudra, and then we will take the blessings of the spiritual master and offer pranam mantras like that. One may also offer some flower or something. You know, just it's very simple. This is not a major elaborate puja. The elaborate one will come later. Then you have purifying the hands, flowers, and materials. That's kara shuddhi, pushpa shuddhi, and dravya shuddhi. So once we're seated, then we should purify the hands. Because we put everything down, now we're ready to start. So now we purify the hands before starting the puja. Because if the hands are not clean, then anything we touch will not remain clean. So this can be done with water. It can also be done with putting a little bit of chandan. Take a little bit, just a slight bit of chandan and rub it on the hands. Because then the hands become, that's of course, they have to be properly clean. So you may put some water and then put a little chandan, and then that makes the hands have a pure, and plus they have a nice smell. They smell like chandan rather than, you know, they've just been in your hair or up your nose or, you know, whatever it is, scratching your back or, you know, whatever interesting human smell may be there. You put a little bit of chandan and then voila, you have some nice smelling hands. Right? It means we don't notice so much human smell because we live here on this planet. But when you go above this, even to as low as the Gandharvas, they think humans smell bad. You know, just like, you know, like you go into, you know, you got an animal or something like that, and they think they smell great. But we think they don't smell so great. So the same way when you go up to the upper planets, they think humans don't smell very good. Right? So like that. So when we're worshiping the Lord, the idea is that we're very clean and all that. Sometimes devotees tell us fanatic being so clean. Yes, it's fanatic for common humans. But the point is since you're going to be worshiping the Lord and his associates, they're not common humans. So they have a different sense of smell. Therefore, the rules in Pancharatra are so strict about cleanliness. Taking bath 3 times a day, washing the hands, you know, so many times after using the toilet, all these different things, you know, after eating and all that, because the idea is that one should be very, very clean, because you're dealing with personalities who, they are, one, sensitive to the standard of cleanliness, and to the, also to them, if you don't, then it smells, you know, they consider humans not overly attractive in their smell. Mm-hmm. Understand? Like that. So one always must consider others, right? So that must mean he's a demigod. So we must understand that the rules are here for our benefit, that we are suitable for doing worship for the Lord. Then we understand. When we understand why we're doing this, is to please the Lord, then we don't mind doing it. Otherwise, then many times I think I was fanatic because I mean, as a West, you know, in the West, we took bath, you know, once a week, you know, whatever it is, Saturday night or Sunday night or Wednesday night or whenever night of the week was for that. And, you know, that was if you're being, you know, quite, you know, good standard, you know, once a week, you know, some people it's less, you know. So like that, so then, you know, once a day it's, you know, getting, that's enough, you know. And like this, so then we must understand that we're working, we're doing for the Lord. We're not doing for, these rules are for our benefit, but they're so that we can please the Lord. Okay, then the flowers, they're purified by prokshana with some anya argya, there's some mudras. And he gives a little explanation of mudras here. In elaborate, one may use mudras, one doesn't need to. We'll go through them, but the mudras are an option. But mudra specifically means they're hand positions that give the Lord joy. That's the actual translation of it. The mudras means those that you know, it's for the Lord's pleasure. Like we see dance, everything is mudra. You know, any expression of emotion, of the eyes, of the hand movements, of the body movements, all those things, that is all called mudra. That's why you can see somebody and they do something, you can understand what is their mood by the mudras, right? Like that. So you can tell by the look of their eyes, their facial expressions, their arm movements, the body movements, you know. Then one can understand what is their attitude, what is their mood. So the more practiced one is, the more one can understand from these movements. So in the scriptures, then we find that then so many mudras are given, that these mudras then represent certain things. And then in the deity worship, then so many of them are also used to then bring that pleasure to the Lord. So the Gaudiya Vaishnavas will, you know, may use the mudras within this Purvanga Karmas. Anything preliminary. It means preliminary items, you want to purify something like that, then mudras are used. But generally, within the worship itself, when you're actually offering the items, then we don't use mudras. That's specifically Vaikuntha worship, where we use mudras to offer the individual items. Like that means each article of each of the 16 items has a mudra. And so then those. So we generally don't bother with those. We only use those things that are preliminary or purifying. Okay. Yeah. It mentions five mudras are especially dear to Krishna, namely the Venu, which is Krishna's flute, Vanamala, Krishna's garland, Bilva, which is bale fruit, Srivatsa, which is the Lakshmi, the hair, white hair on his chest, signifying Lakshmi, and Kustuba, which is his special gem that he wears around his neck. It's green, I think it's an emerald, and it's in the shape of a calf. And that represents all the jivas. Like that. So we see that the jivas and Sri, Lakshmi, always has on his chest. Like that. So these ones may be done at different points, at a particular point in the worship. Yeah. Okay. So flowers, then we purify them by prokshana and mudras and mantra. We don't wash them. Flowers are never washed. Few reasons. One, you wash them, flowers are very expert at holding water. And there's nothing more annoying than getting a garland or an offering of cold, wet, clammy flowers that once they touch your body, then all the water runs all over and makes a mess of everything. Two, when you wash them with water, all the smell comes out. So the whole idea of flowers is they have a nice smell. So therefore, we pick the flowers with clean hands. We put them into a clean container. We bring them in a clean way. We put them down in a clean place. And then when it's time for puja, then we sprinkle them with some water and chant some mantra like that. And then holo, they are purified. Mm-hmm. You have a question. Tulsi can be done in that way, or can be washed. Tulsi is not such a problem. But if it's a lot of mandris, then I would do it by mantra. But if it's leaves that are being used, or very, very small mandris that are being used for the boga offering, they can be washed. Like that. Right. But otherwise, they can be purified by mantra and prakshana also. Like that. One always does something. Like that. You know, Radharani is so pure, but still she takes a bath. So like that, Tulsi likes to be purified in this way. But generally, one doesn't have to so much wash this, that. Unless you know you're putting some, you know, some things on there to keep the bugs away or something, then definitely one should wash. For those things, ones that Krishna's eating. You know? It means what'll go on the boga offering, those can be washed. But the ones that'll be just used, like with the flowers, and made into garlands and that, those should not be washed. Those should just be sprinkled with water and mantra. Okay. Then you have purification of the elements of the material body. This is called Bhuta Shuddhi. Bhuta meaning the here. Bhuta Shuddhi means purification of the bodily elements. Means earth, water, fire, air, ether. These are the bhutas, mahabhutas. Right? This doesn't mean ghosts. This means the elements, right? What's the difference? There's a difference in spelling for ghost?
I think that is Dilgokar. Ghost
is long. This is Bhuta. Mahabhuta.
Yeah, this is long.
Yeah. But it's BH, Bhu?
Yeah.
Or it's Bhu? Oh, so it's also probably there, because they're subtle elements, because the Mahabhutas means earth, water, fire, air, ether. But then the ghost is made out of mind, intelligence, and false ego, so that's also Bhutas, but it just means that that's that level. So if they only have that and don't have this, then they're ghosts. And if they have this and that, then, yeah, Mahabhut, big Bhut, right? Okay. So he goes on to explain here, Krishna Kshetra, the material body is filled with sinful desire. Indeed, the very origin of the material body is sinful desire. Right? Means we wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna. So one may be very proud, you know, of his position, and he's so wonderful and nice and kind and moral and upstanding and all kinds of good things. But the point is, we are in this material world because of material desire. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Unless you're an incarnation, and then we'll, you know, that's another category. So if anyone would like to come forward and, how you say, reveal to us themselves as the self-effulgent, you know, personalities, then who have come down, the Nitya Siddhas, then that means we are here because of sinful desire. Therefore, the body must be purified. So that's the process of Bhuta Shuddhi. So a person cannot worship the Lord or even approach the Lord in such a condition. As it is said in the Shastra, Na Devo Devam Arachayet, which means without being on the level of a Deva, in other words, pure, one cannot worship the Lord. Okay, the procedure that purifies us of material consciousness and awakens us to awareness of our spiritual body is called Bhuta Shuddhi, as the Hari Bhakti Vilas states, quote, the process of purifying one's body made up of the bhutas, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, through association with the transcendental Lord, is called Bhutashuddhi. And Krishna Kshetra continues, Bhutashuddhi is a necessary step mentioned in all puja manuals, utilized in all types of puja, japa, and meditation. It is performed by devotees on all levels of advancement. Bhutashuddhi is accomplished in one of two ways. The first is the elaborate, systematic method of purging the gross material elements from the body and reconstituting the body with new revitalized elements, ultimately arriving at purified consciousness. The second method, which devotees of Krishna favor, entails remembering that one is an eternal servant of Krishna and thus completely spiritual and pure. When is established in such consciousness, the elements of the body automatically become purified. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Lord Krishna sums up the characteristics of one who is situated in spiritual Brahma-bhuta consciousness. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nashochati nakankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Bhagavad Gita 18:54. So, in other words, you have two systems. One that takes about 15 to 20 minutes, where you have to meditate on the body. You move the super soul and the soul up to the top of the head. Then you destroy the whole body by meditation. Then you go and put each element back into the body and all the different aspects of the body and everything. And each one has their different meditation, their color, and everything. And then once that's in, then you put the soul, super soul back in place. Then you go on to the mind, then on to the consciousness, you know, onto the intelligence, the consciousness, like that. So what that is the one system, the systematic, what he mentioned, systematic and mechanical, like that. So then the other system, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has recommended, that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas follow, you start the other way. Because the consciousness became impure, therefore we developed an impure ego. That makes an impure intelligence, impure mind, then impure body and senses. So if you change the consciousness, then you change everything else. Therefore, we use Bhutashuddhi for establishing ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Then from that, then all the other aspects become purified. So this is done by meditation. It means the other one, that elaborate mechanical system, means you have to meditate on each thing. So because of that, the mind has to be engaged, otherwise you get nowhere. Right? Because so there's so many things you have to meditate on. But for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, then it's a matter we meditate on Krishna, we're the servant of Krishna. So that means we use this verse, Naham Vipro Nacha Narupatir Napi Vaishna Shudra. So I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm a Shudra, I'm not a Brahmachari, Grihastha Vanaprastha Nyas. I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of the Gopis. But that means we have to actually think that, contemplate that, and try to mean that. Then the process of Bhutashuddhi is complete. If we just say the mantra while we're thinking of, you know, what's going to be for breakfast, then we actually have not attained Bhutashuddhi, because Bhutashuddhi means all these things are rituals with a purpose. They all establish a purpose in our service. You know, like we were mentioning before, how we do. You need pure water. Then you establish a seat because you're taking the blessings of the earth, that she is supporting us, giving us a place, giving us shelter. She's taking care of us. So we're recognizing that before we start the worship. Right? Because she's holding everything. Right? Then the patras, you must have all the paraphernalia. Right? Then you're getting the blessings of the spiritual master. He's doing the worship, we're not doing. Then we purify everything, so that everything is pure like the Lord. Then, after that, we purify ourselves, so we are also pure. In other words, if you want to worship, you worship the Supreme Brahman with Brahman. So if everything's not on that Brahman platform, then how will it be offered? So it's brought to that platform by mantra, by mudras, by meditation. Right? So that's the whole idea of preliminary activities, purvanga karma or yoga. It means to bring one's consciousness to the level, the transcendental platform, so that now on the transcendental platform one can worship the Lord. Therefore, so much elaborate ritual is there, but each ritual has its function to bring you to the transcendental platform. In other words, the ideal thing is you're always remembering Krishna, never forgetting, you're always on that platform. So then these are not necessary. But if you're not on that platform, these are necessary to step by step ensure that you get there. Because someone who is on the transcendental platform, he sees himself, his body, his mind, his words, are all for the Lord's service. He sees that he can only serve the Lord through his spiritual master. He is always conscious of the Lord's dham, conscious of the Lord's place, that is by her grace and by all the other devotees that we are able to approach and serve the Lord. Right? Then we understand all the paraphernalia also must be of best quality and of the transcendental platform, because we see everything, one, is Krishna's energy, and two, that the best quality, the best, nicest thing should be offered to Krishna. Right? So all this stuff must be attained before starting the worship. Right? So it may look mechanical. It may look like a bunch of rituals, but it has a purpose. So you either have attained that purpose by chanting Hare Krishna, and you're on that platform, or you have to go through it mechanically. And you can either go through it elaborately mechanically, like the other acharyas, the other sampradayas do, like Ramanuja and Madhva give to their followers, or we can follow it in a simplified form that works more just on adjusting the consciousness each time. That how our acharyas give it. But in any case, the ritual itself is the medium through which we concentrate to change our consciousness. Understand? We may be using prokshana, we may be sprinkling water, we may be saying a mantra, there may be some mudra, there may be some small ritual. But those are just ways to see that we actually do that function. So we can see when we become at the beginning, we don't know how to do the ritual, don't know the mantra, don't know the mudra. So there's some excitement there while we learn that, and our attention is there as long as we're there, and we think, oh, this is so nice, and we're so happy because we're fully concentrating on all these things. We're not thinking of anything else, breakfast, lunch, or anything else. But then once we get it down, we know the mantras, we memorize them, we're familiar with the puja. It just goes on, whether we think or don't, we'll just do it by habit. We know what to do in the ritual. Then we figure, now it's boring. I know how to do it. So that is for those who are controlled by the modes of passion and ignorance, those who are strong in their mentality. Then they will find this to be true. Because then they have to move on to some new activity. Because they see things externally. So it's the activity I do. If I'm doing some new activity, then it is fresh. Right, Nava Yovana means that ever fresh means it has to be something I haven't done before, externally. Right? But for those who are situated more in goodness, then once you've memorized it, that's now when the real work starts. Because now we're working, now we can work, instead of trying to remember the mantra and remember the mudra and remember this, and not be remembering Krishna. Now we can start to remember Krishna. When we put the mudras, mantras into the water, when we install Krishna in the water, then we see Krishna in that water. We see ourselves as Krishna's servant. We actually feel that I am the servant of my spiritual master and the previous acharyas. They are doing the worship. So then it becomes alive because of the concept of the meditation, of the consciousness. Right? So this is basically what one has. One learns this puja, one will be able to continue to do it because he finds something living in the worship itself, because he's able to maintain and develop the consciousness. like that. Or one will learn it and then, okay, now I know it. Now what's the next thing? Because one is not able to work on that subtle platform. One has to work on the external platform. One must get external stimulation to feel enlivened. One is not enlivened by one by internal stimuli. You understand? Like that. Of course, external stimuli that's Krishna conscious is always, that's the whole purpose of associating with devotees, is we get Krishna conscious stimulation from outside. But we should also be able to produce ourselves by our own chanting, our own meditation, our own service. So that way the devotee has both. You know? But if we only have one or the other, we got a problem. If we only have our own, we can't associate with devotees. That's going to, at one point, we may be situated in goodness, but we'll get stuck there. We won't be able to get to pure goodness because we have to be able to associate with devotees. The Lord's associated with devotees. You're not going to find the Lord alone. He's always going to be with somebody. All right? That's okay. You don't like that. You understand? He's always surrounded by so many devotees. But there's no envy or jealousy, so they're happy that the others are there. Here, it's like you want the Lord alone for yourself. You know? What? Yes, if you're Mother Jashoda or Radharani or Subal or Sridham or like that. But just remember, as a jiva, then we are supposed to follow them. Prabhupada says, as one advances, one follows in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan. That means following their footsteps means you assist them in their service. You don't try to compete with them. You can do that. You'll get the opportunity. But one must always remember that they are the internal potency. And they fully, Mother Jashoda knows 100% how to please Krishna in the Vatsalya Ras. No one can please Krishna more in Vatsalya Ras than her. So that means everybody else is assisting. So one can either assist her, or one can be competition.
I remember Guru Prabhupada said that, yes, we should say our Krishna or my Krishna.
That's all right, but that doesn't mean that my doesn't mean, it's just like my father, it doesn't mean that that cuts out all my brothers and sisters. You know, or it cuts out my, you know, my mother, because it's also her husband. You know, or it cuts out my grandparents because they think, oh, he's my son. You know? You understand? My means is that you identify so strongly that this is, Krishna is so wonderful and nice that and our relationship with him, that we identify my Krishna. Right? But my Krishna means that Krishna will be engaged. Means I will assist those persons in their service to Krishna. You understand? It's hard to understand from the material platform. Because the material world means it's only good if it's yours. And you have it totally to yourself, you know? Right? Like you have a big pakura if it's yours and it's only you eat it. Now if you have to share it with everyone else, then it kind of loses something. Right? But the point is Krishna is not like that. He's unlimited. So everybody can reciprocate with him and nothing's lost. So my means that possession, but it's not selfish. It's not for your own purpose. Otherwise, then it's just a matter. So then who is it? You? Who's it going to be? You know? You got Sridham can please Krishna, or then there's you. Right? So now, if you want to cut out Sridham or Sudham or Mother Jashoda or like that and just put yourself there, how much pleasure can you give Krishna? Right? So that means you're giving pleasure, they're not. How much you'll give in comparison? Right?
I understand.
No. We haven't finished yet. You understand that point? Okay, now, which is more pleasure? You've cut out the eternal associates here and you've gotten in there yourself. Right? So you're in there yourself. And so how much pleasure you'll give? and then under whose direction, and under how do you know what will please Krishna, right? Then, or the other way is, you leave the eternal associate there serving Krishna. So they're already giving so much pleasure to Krishna, right? So, and they're giving more than what we can give. Now, if we add what little bit we can give onto what they're giving, so then that's a lot of pleasure for Krishna, plus a little bit more, right? Well, if you do it the other way, that means you reduce it from a lot of pleasure down to just a little bit. So one has to be very careful that one does not compete with these eternal associates, but one assists. That's why Krishna says, one who says he is my devotee, he's not my devotee, right? Because if you say you're directly Krishna's devotee, you're not Krishna's devotee, because that means you want to give Krishna less pleasure. You know, you can give a little bit of pleasure, someone else can give a lot more, but you don't want them to give, you want to directly give. Because you want it for yourself. You're selfish. Krishna's, right? So then that means you want to give Krishna less pleasure. That means you're not a devotee. Because a devotee wants to see Krishna gets more pleasure. So if he gets more pleasure by someone else being with Krishna, that is his pleasure. So if he can arrange for whoever gives Krishna the most pleasure to be with Krishna, that is his pleasure. So that is his service. So Krishna says, those who say they're this devotee of my devotee, they are my devotee. So when we become the devotee of the spiritual master, the previous acharyas, and the residents of Vrindavan, then we become Krishna's devotee. And before that, we're actually not Krishna's devotee. Does that make some sense?
I understand. Okay. So basically, Krishna expands himself for the individual.
Yes.
And there's a whole group of devotees. And materially, you won't see Krishna because everyone's coming in front of you, in front of you, so you won't see Krishna. But I think in the spiritual world, some of you have your vision, all the way, everyone. Like every desire is Krishna. And 24 hours, you'll see him. So it means like, he reveals himself to you, but he is yours for 24 hours.
No, but he can be yours even though he's not with you.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
No, that's not what you mean. You mean something else. You mean that I have Krishna with me and he's always with me expanding for my pleasure. The point is he expanding for your pleasure, or you are there for his pleasure? See, these are the subtleties that can only be understood and explained by the Gaudiya Sampradaya. No other Sampradaya can explain this, because all the other Sampradaya are explaining what you're explaining. That's why they have, it's one, it's two, it's one and it's two, or it's kind of one. Or it's very similar to one. But this is the other philosophies. There's no philosophy, no one else can explain. It's simultaneously one and different. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava's philosophy is the most subtle. So the point is one should understand this point. If Mother Yashoda can give so much pleasure to Krishna, why not you just assist her? That's all you're worried about. She can give the most pleasure to Krishna, I will help. Whatever I can, whatever she tells me, I do that, and that will please Krishna. Then if Krishna wants to be standing next to you, that's up to him. He's coming for his pleasure, not for your pleasure. My pleasure is just I assist the eternal resident in Vrindavan. That is my pleasure. That's the meaning of aslishiva paratam pinashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karotuva. If it gives you pleasure to be with someone else, that's my pleasure. If it gives you pleasure to make me unhappy, that's my pleasure. So that's the conclusion of the teachings. Right. Like that is, our pleasure is seeing Krishna. So that's the conclusion of the teachings. Right. Like that is, our pleasure is seeing Krishna's pleasure. Whatever makes him please, you know. Because here we're saying, well, he expands to be with the devotee means he's going to be with me. You know. But if he expands to be with you, he could be getting, you know, more pleasure with someone else. So you'd rather assist that other person. You understand? That's it's a totally different concept. Here, when we say we love somebody, it just means that I got it for myself and I can do what I want. I like this person so much because I can tell all my jokes and they don't, you know, tell me I'm stupid. You know? Like that. Or I like listening to them all the time, or they got lots of money and they do things and takes me around and do this and that with me. Right? But it's always me. It's never, I'm just doing for them, and whether they appreciate, don't appreciate, I just do it. You don't have that. Material world, you don't have it. Mother is mentioned in the Shastra. The mother's as close as you get, but even then, mother's expecting something back. I took care of you now, and when I get old, you're going to take care of me. You know? Even the best mothers like that. You know? They expect you to appreciate. They don't expect when you turn 12 years old you're going to say, hey, mom, beat it. You know? Right? So the whole point is it's part of the, you know, in the material world, it's just the way it works. The emotional platform means it's a reciprocation. Though it's more gentle, it's more subtle. You know, there's more feeling there. It's not so gross as on the sensual platform. But it still is like that. So it's very difficult to understand the mood of the resident. That's why Vrindavan's so special. It's very rarely the doors are opened. Because Vaikuntha you can understand. I want to be with God, I want to serve God, so I either want to be on the same planet as God, being a close, intimate associate of God, I want to have the same opulence as God, or I want to have the same bodily form. So they're spiritual desires. But they still have some interest on one's own side. That's why it's called pure devotional service. Smell like onions or something?
Onions.
Somebody cooking or somebody got some?
If it travels that far, it could come from the field. Because the neighbors
really?
Are living in the field over there. The ones that, you know, doing all the digging.
Really? I mean, that's pretty powerful. I'm surprised you probably go over there and find them all dead. They just killed themselves with the fumes that it gets over here. Sometimes you get like that. We used to have that in the temple. You'd hear the really strong smell like onion. And they were wondering, where is this coming from? We're going all over the place, this, that. You know, our life members cooking in their rooms, this, that. Then we found out it was when you leave the neem leaves in the water for a few days, so it gets really strong, and then they would put that on tulsi to get rid of the bugs. When you first pour it, it smells like onion. Yeah, it's got that smell.
Pungent.
Yeah, it's very pungent like that. Just like the onion. You know, then after a few minutes, the odor goes away. But just that, when you first pour it, like that. So then I understood is that, you know, there's so much desire in the, you know, more degraded palate. It likes onions. But actually, that flavor is there in its subtle, pure form in neem leaves. So therefore, you see in the you know, at least especially like in the Bengali cooking, then the, you know, neem with eggplant, neem with potatoes, or neem and, you know, in different shuktas or that, or the medicines and stuff. So the neem was there, you know. You fry the neem, eat it with rice, you know. So like that, you'd get that in there, but in its subtler, pure form rather than its grosser, blunt taste. Huh?
Has it heard that in the beginning of the devotional service you consider you I am Krishna, so in the advanced level you say Krishna is mine?
Yes, both aspects are there. But the point is we are Krishna's, meaning everything is or we have is for Krishna. But both can be there. I am Krishna's, but Krishna is mine. But in the beginning we only see I am Krishna's. But Krishna's mind is not a selfish thing. Krishna's mind, because the relationship is there. You know, it's like you have something, you have a relationship, like you have a very good friend, is my friend. That doesn't mean he's not friends with everybody else and all that. But I'm part of that friendship. That may be, there may be 20 other friends, but I'm part of that, you know. I'm part of their life, they're part of my life, right? So mine meaning the part of my life and soul, I can't live without. Doesn't mean mine, I have them and they're mine, no one else gets them, you know, when I get Krishna then no one else can, you know, Mother Yashoda is looking around what happened to him and, you know, no one else can find what happened to Krishna because we've got him sitting somewhere on a rock someplace, you know, making him play the flute while we sit there and look at his face, you know. You understand? So the whole idea is that there's a whole different concept because of the pure love. So that you only find in Vrindavan. Right? In Vaikuntha then it's more, in like Dwarka, it is on a more higher platform than in Vaikuntha. That's why it's called Mahavaikuntha. And Krishna and Balaram in Dwarka and Mathura called Mahanarayan. But still, there's an attachment for rules and regulations. You understand? There's still attachment for rules and regulations are there. But when that's given up, when then it's called pure, unalloyed devotional service, and that you only find in Vrindavan. That's why the residents of Vrindavan are so special. And that's why only once in a day of Brahma, out of 1,000 cycles of the yugas, only once means 999 cycles, Vaikuntha is open. But on one of the cycles only is Vrindavan open. So this is what's so special. Mahavaranya avatar. Because he's giving something that's not been given. All the other times you can't get into Vrindavan. Even in South, they all sing things about Vrindavan. Andal's prayers are about Vrindavan and this and that, but they'll go to Vaikuntha. They won't go to Vrindavan because of this subtle point. So that is what is special. So you may get into the details of those and sit around and read books about, you know, this eternal associate or that eternal associate. But the effect is that you have that understanding. That's the real thing. That's what gets one inside. Not that one knows so many stories and can quote this and quote that, and then, you know, when it comes down to it, then we fight over some political thing or some who's in what position or who's got the influence or who's got the money or who's got the this, or fight over moral principles. Or that means we've memorized some nice stories, but it doesn't mean that we've come to that platform. Yes.
Many times you say that it's very difficult to explain this transcendental topic. But how can a material mind, because as long as you're in the material world, the mind is material, how can you reach a material mind speak the topic?
It means the material mind can be purified by the process of sadhana bhakti and by association. Therefore, we must hear and do all these things. Then the mind can start to... It's not the mind that understands. It's the heart that understands. And that's reflected in the mind. So only as we become purified and we get the blessings of the spiritual master and the devotees and Krishna, then we can understand. That's the difference between jnana and vijnana. You can read so many stories, that's called jnana. Oh, you know what Krishna is doing at this time of the day, or you know who's doing that. But that's called jnana. But vijnana is another thing altogether. Vijnana means realization. So vijnana only comes when there is service rendered with devotion. Then you get vijnana. So you have to become purified. So that's the process of one must go through anartha nivritti. Only once one's gone through anartha nivritti, then it's called advanced devotional service. And that's the madhyama. The madhyama means who has gone through a majority of the anarthas. Now he's down to the subtler platform. He's steady in service. Then one gets a taste for devotional service. And at that time, by getting that higher taste, the lower tastes for Dhanam, Janam, Sundarim go away. You know? On the gross platform. Maybe on a more very subtle platform, they're still there. But one must be very careful to try to get rid of them at that point. Otherwise, later one may not recognize. Then, from the taste of performing service, then one gets attachment to Krishna. See, ruchi means you have you like the service. You like chanting, you like hearing, you like being with devotees, but you see it's all Krishna's paraphernalia. You know, or Krishna form the name. But then, with time, then one gets attachment to Krishna as a person. Like, I like chanting Hare Krishna. I may be only to a slight degree understanding the holy name as the Lord. You know? A form or qualities. But in the point of attachment, of asakti, that means now we attach to Krishna because of his pastimes and his association with his devotees. His reciprocation with the devotees. So now we're attached to him as a person. Right? Then one moves into the next stages of uttam bhakti. Okay. So one must get through the anartas. So many people don't kind of like sideline the vaidhi bhakti, sadhana, you know, that aspect of sadhana. But without that, you can go on reading a million stories about Krishna, and whether you'll get there or not is very debatable. Yeah?
So, you're getting a taste from performing the devotional activities and chanting the name. Then in Asakti, it becomes a taste to Krishna. Does that mean that one understands that this pleasure is coming from, one understanding Asakti, that the pleasure one experiences in Ruchi is coming from Krishna's person? That's why one becomes a taste to
Krishna. Yeah, you could see it like that.
The devotional service,
Speak louder.
Sorry?
Speak louder.
The devotional service you're performing is being accepted by Krishna on the from the level of bhava.
That I would even say higher.
Even higher. And how will you get the realization that the devotional service is not accepted?
Devotional service is always being accepted. It's just a matter of the seriousness of it being accepted. It's always, you do anything, it's accepted. You know?
It
goes through the parampara, of course. See, Krishna accepts everything. But then when you surrender to the parampara, then he takes, now your service is getting serious. Because then you go from ordinary devotee into the transcendentally situated. Like so you have Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha. But when you come to Bhajana Kriya, means following their instruction, that's when Krishna starts to take it seriously. Then when one starts Bhajana Kriya, then there's Nishta Bhajana Kriya and Anishta. So Anishta means when there's so much anartas. So you have to get rid of that. Then when you come to Nishta Bhajana Kriya, then it becomes steady. Like that. So that's called advanced devotional service. Because now one starts to actually understand the transcendental platform. Before that, one sees everything totally externally. You know, one understands the philosophy, and there's a slight bit, but then it becomes more prominent. Then that deepens more and more till in bhava, then one gets a spiritual form. And one gets or receives back one's spiritual form. And one is able to then enter the spiritual world by meditation with that form and render service under the direction of those devotees. But they're going to test you. You're not going to directly see Krishna. They're first going to test you, how you do things around your service. They give you things to do. They see you do that nicely. Then they talk about, okay, going and seeing Krishna. Right?
So they want to see what's your mood. What do you do? What are your motives? Why you're doing things? Because they're not going to, you know, introduce you to Krishna if you're not up to the standard. So even in bhava, that's why bhava is still, you can fall from bhava. So you're still not, even though you're in the spiritual realm, you're directly in the pastimes, you're with Krishna. You know, his associates, you're in the dham. You can still fall from there. You know? So that's an important point to understand. Then when they see this completely pure and there's no material motives at all, then one can cross by their blessings only into apan dasa. Their blessings means the eternal associates, the spiritual master, the eternal associates, Krishna, like that. There, whatever, anybody. There's somebody in the whole equation in the pastimes gives you their blessings. So maybe the spiritual master, maybe the previous acharyas, maybe other associates, maybe Krishna himself. Then you cross into apandasa, which means prema. And then from that platform, generally you won't fall. Then, when it's seen that service is like very high quality, then one goes to the last one, I forget what it is, but it means vastu siddhi. Means now the spiritual form, that is your form. Means now we're in the material form, by meditation we're in the spiritual form, that's called sarup siddhi. So from here we're projecting ourselves there, but it's bona fide. We've been given that by the associates of the Lord. It's not sahajya, it's real. Right? Before one comes to that platform of Brahma-Bhuta platform, if one tries to do that, that's called sahajya. You project yourself in the pastimes before being given that by being qualified by sadhana bhakti and coming to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then it's called sahajya. But if it's not, then that's called sarup siddhi. Then one comes to Vastu Siddhi, which means that is your form. You may come here and take a form here, but you have that form. In other words, you become Nitya Siddha. So Vastu Siddhi means Nitya Siddha. Now the spiritual form, that is your form. You know? You've been tested and approved. Like that. So like this it goes.
When bhakti results in the side effect that it gives jnana also, what level is it after Brahma Bhuta? Because sometimes you already say, well,
all the way. Just keeps going.
You say, don't do any service, just do any service, because Prabhupada said that one result of bhakti is jnana comes out automatically.
Yes, but also we find that Prabhupada always says, read my books, so one has to follow both instructions. You know, I mean, it may be, how you say? Seemingly favorable for the temple president or the temple commander, Sankirtan leader, to make these statements. But the real point is Prabhupada says, if you don't read all of his books, you'll fall down. So, you know, maybe they don't mind losing a few souls, but somehow or another, parampara gets very worried, you know, if even one goes away. You know, of course, we're very liberal, you know. Like in the army, you have the, how do you call it? The soldiers, foot soldiers, so they call them cannon fodder. Cannon fodder means food for the cannons. It's like, okay, we want to distract some attention or, you know, catch that thing, so we send in, you know, 100 men. Okay, maybe they all get killed, but then we get that place. So that was worth it. We lost 100 men, but we got the place. But in the transcendental army, we should try not to lose anybody, because they belong to Krishna, not to us. So therefore, reading must go on. Is it possible to end this class? Or?
Yeah.
Huh? You'll ask the question tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow is great.
Okay.
Okay.
On the same topic.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.